Welcome to the Knit More Girls podcast, a multi-generational knitting production. This is our Director's Cut episode featuring Charlene Church, and it is brought to you without commercial interruption by Abstract Fiber, the best place to buy the most beautiful yarn and fibers ever. We did this interview at the Sock Summit in 2009, and I think that the interview has held up beautifully over time. If you've knit socks or lace, you've certainly heard about Charlene Church, and I know we've talked about her work on the show extensively. So, as Mom would say, grab your knitting, pull up a chair, and start your row.
This morning, we're joined by Charlene Church, author of a lot of books, including The Little Box of Socks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our podcast.
Delighted to be here and delighted to be in Portland.
Exactly. So let's talk about a little bit of what you're teaching and about your books and all sorts of fun stuff.
Okay. Here, I'm teaching three different classes five times. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I taught two sections of durability issues for socks, mm-hmm. ways people can knit sock fabric denser and more durable so that they last longer. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow I'm teaching a class on how to decorate heel flaps in mm-hmm. interesting ways to make socks more interesting. And then on Sunday I'm teaching one section of how to use up all the yarn knitting a top-down sock.
That's going to be awesome.
But basically you do a provisional cast on around the ankle and knit your top-down sock and then knit the cuff separately.
Brilliant. That's awesome. Okay. What kind of socks do you like to knit? Do you have a preference as to top-down or bottom-up?
I basically like top-down socks with a heel flap, and I really like simple but beautiful beaded rib kinds of things.
Nice.
And there are a whole range of those kinds of patterns, but I think they're attractive and they fit well and there's enough elasticity to them.
Cool.
And you're not tied to the chart or the pattern for exactly. overly complicated stuff.
So speaking of charts and patterns, you have some rather well-known books, including Sensational Knitted Socks and More Sensational Knitted Socks, and our favorite, The Little Box of Socks. So let's talk about publishing and writing and kind of where you get your inspiration from and all that good stuff.
Okay. Do you want me to start with all the books I've done?
Whatever floats your fancy.
Okay. The first book I did was mostly mittens. Mm-hmm. And it started in the early 90s. I read Richard Rutt's A History of Hand Knitting, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of information about knitting from all over the world. My mother was born in Prague, and there was nothing about Eastern European knitting or Russian knitting, I noticed, mm-hmm. in this book. And I thought about it, and my mother knit, my grandmother knit, so what's this about? So I was living in New York City at the time and went to the New York Public Library and started going through their old indexes, and I found these two little Cyrillic Russian volumes with beautiful color patterns. And I thought, well, it's not Czech, but it's Slavic. Mm-hmm. We have a summer house in Connecticut, and Wesleyan University is there, and I saw something in the paper one day about a new member for the Russian faculty, and I thought, great, so there are people that speak Russian in Middletown. So I called the Russian department. I said, hi, is there somebody who can translate something for me? So they said, yes, there's somebody at the language lab. So I went to the language lab, called the language lab, talked to this guy, and he had sort of a British accent, and I thought, well, okay. And we made an appointment so I could go and see him and bring the stuff so that he could translate for me. And when I walked in, here's this guy. He's over 6 feet tall, and he looks Chinese. Mm-hmm. And he is a native Buryat, which is Siberian, and those people tend to look Oriental. Mm-hmm. And because he learned to speak English in Europe young, they tend to speak with a British accent.
Huh.
But he was fascinating, and in addition to translating this work, he talked to me a lot about the ethnic groups throughout Russia, which, you know, we tend to think of it as one monolithic thing, whereas, you know, with the breakup of the Soviet Union, there have been lots of different groups, mm-hmm. And they are a very diverse population, more than just the Slavic Russians. So anyway, these patterns and the book that I had was written in the mid-70s by a Russian anthropologist, and she went to this area and looked at the knitting, and at that point only, she said in the book, only the grandmothers were knitting, and she was trying to save it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, it's the Komi people, and they are not Slavic, they're Finno-Ugric, and originally migrated to Russia from the Kazakhstan area, mm-hmm. and they are also related to the Finns, Estonians, and more loosely to the Hungarians. Mm-hmm. But that language group is not part of the Indo-European language group, which makes them a very different people and a very different language than Western Europe and the English. But the patterns are really wonderful because they're pre-literate people. So how do you pass them on? And they read in the knitting. Mm-hmm. And they're big, bold patterns, and they... every third row of the pattern is three dark, three light. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing colored stranded knitting, you sort of go on cruise control. And then in the other two rows, they all follow a repeat of either one, three, or five stitches.
Hmm.
So when you're following the chart, even though it's a big, complicated looking pattern, there is an internal rule to it and a simplicity to it that makes them a pleasure to knit.
Huh.
So it was really fascinating to do the knitting, and then I wanted to find out more. If you're writing a book, they want you to plump up the front of the book with a little bit of stuff. So I started looking for it, and I went to the National Geographic. Nobody had made a trip to the Komi Republic that they had done that. And then I thought about it, and in the 20th century, because of communism and because of Stalin and because of all of that, people were not traveling mm-hmm. to that area much. So again, to the New York Public Library, and I found two old, around 1900, little volumes, one from San Francisco and one from London, and they were adventuring journals. And apparently there were these adventuring societies, and if you were really big and famous or had a lot of money, you could mount an expedition to the North Pole. Well, people did other adventures that weren't quite the North Pole, but mm-hmm. so two people made trips to the Komi Republic, and in addition to writing about how they got there and all of that, which is quite arduous, this area is about 900 miles northeast of Moscow,
mm-hmm.
and gave a lot of anthropological information about the people.
That is so cool.
So it was really a wonderful adventure to find out all this information, and I haven't been, but I'm hoping at some point to go and see it. And one of the people that I found online was a college professor from the University of Maine who had spent a semester in Syktyvkar, the capital of the Komi Republic, mm-hmm. computer science guy, and he set up the internet for them. So I found him. He had a few knitted pieces. We met, we talked, and I gave him a few books, and he sent one mm-hmm. to the museum in the Komi Republic, and they wrote and sent me a letter and thanked me for doing it, for documenting it, and for having the chart so that it saved them for them, too.
Cool.
So it's a very satisfying experience. And the book went out of print about 3 years ago. And Martingale, I guess because of the interest in my other work, Martingale is reprinting it.
Yay.
And slight revision, and it will be out the end of November.
Hooray.
Excellent.
Yes.
So I think I have one of the originals.
Oh, very good.
So along with the book about mittens, mm-hmm. you also wrote Sensational Knitted Socks.
Well, yes.
Okay.
Okay, before that, though,
yeah.
I did Hats On.
That's right. That's right.
And that came out in, I think, 99, 10 years ago. But hats are another good project. I guess either I have a short attention span or I have a warm weather life as well. We spend the winter in Florida mm-hmm. and the summer in Connecticut. So I don't need a lot of sweaters. Mm-hmm. So I do smaller projects. And the hats are a wonderful way to learn about a lot of knitting techniques. You've got a usable thing when you're finished. You only need one, mm-hmm. so you don't have the whole second sock or second mitten syndrome mm-hmm. problem. And they don't take that long, and they can be a lot of really good knitting.
Yep. So I don't believe for a second, by the way, that you're a quick project person, because Charlene has this beautiful shawl that she just finished. It's the Frost Flowers shawl from Interweave.
The Interweave Knits, what, holiday issue, I think, last year.
It's stunning, and it'll be the picture for the show notes, so keep an eye on that. But so you do all these small, you wrote the mitten book, the hat book, and then
Sensational Knitted Socks.
Terrific.
And it was wonderful. I go to a spinning event in Florida every year, and my friend Brenda, I don't know, I was doing something, some stupid project that we all do. I don't even remember what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she came over to me, and she was talking to me, and she said, "You need to stop knitting that." And I said, "What?" And she said, "Yeah, just don't knit that anymore." She said, "You need to think about socks." I said, "What should I think about socks?" She said, "I don't know, but you think about things in interesting ways. Think about socks."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Great. Thanks a lot." So those things tend, the answers don't come to you very quickly. They tend to percolate for a while. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about socks. And one of the reasons I wrote, one of the problems I had with a lot of sock patterns that were out previously, mm-hmm. is they were written for adult average or women's medium or some nebulous thing. Mm-hmm. I have a very small foot. I'm not a big person. And so there were a lot of those patterns that I couldn't knit as written because they were too big for me. Mm-hmm. And I came to surmise that whatever the size was and whatever they called it, it was, this is the size of the foot of the person who wrote the pattern. Mm-hmm. And it was one size, one yarn. And when they say one size fits all, well, a lot of us know it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I began thinking about it, and there are now so many more sock yarns, and they're not all the same gauge, and people want to use what they have or what they love, and there are some yarns that you can't find or have gone out of business or whatever. And I knew that the basic sock pattern was a formula. So there was no reason that if you knit a 48 stitch sock in a very fine gauge, it'll fit a small child. If you use really heavy, bulky yarn, mm-hmm. the whole thing, it's a beautifully constructed, an engineered piece of knitting. It's really sculpture, mm-hmm. but it fits a big man mm-hmm. based on that. So there's no reason not to work with patterns and to give people patterns, to give them the choice. And so that's what I did. And with all those complicated looking little charts, and I was worried people would be too put off by it. I like math, I like numbers, mm-hmm. but it seems that people do like it. The other thing is that if you knit a lot of socks to keep people's feet warm, knitting the same sock pattern over and over and over again isn't very interesting for the knitter. And so if you want a little interest while you're doing it, there are a lot of these beautiful, not very complicated ribbed patterns. And so why not give people the opportunity to edit the pattern and choose their own or to do something else? Because the first pattern in Sensational Knitted Socks is for a 4-stitch rib. Mm-hmm. So that's basically a knit 2, purl 2 rib or any variant mm-hmm. or thereof. And there are 12 options. So think how long it would take to knit 12 pairs of socks, and you're only working with the first pattern in the book. And so there's just a lot of entertainment there for sock knitters.
It's definitely one of the books we like to recommend for beginning sock knitters. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. And it's so interesting and so inspiring to flip through it. And what I think is also really nice is that there are pictures of the swatches, and they're nice and clear, and they're not bright colors necessarily, but clear colors that read clearly.
Well, it's white. Yes. No, I'm very much aware of that. And I know people wear socks in darker colors, but I think it's important for any of you out there who are trying to knit for publication, pick colors that will photograph well, because if people can see it and can read the photograph, you'll do better, and people like to be able to see it.
So Sensational Knitted Socks led to?
Well, because Sensational Knitted Socks, I had too much information. And so there was about half of the information in More Sensational Knitted Socks I submitted for the first book. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, it's too many pages. We can't make the book too big. It'll be too expensive. So then when it sold very well and they said, gee, do you have any more? Because they knew we'd cut out a lot. And I said, well, yes. And then I added some more to it. So we did More Sensational Knitted Socks. And that had more pages in it than Sensational Knitted Socks. So it's a huge repertoire of sock patterns and ways to decorate and things to do with socks.
Clever. Now, let's talk about your knitting background a little bit.
Okay.
Because clearly jumping in with color work doesn't sound like you started knitting to work on the mitten book.
That's right. I learned to knit on the couch with Mom, mm-hmm. probably when I was 4 or 5. And my mother's a wonderful and patient woman, and so I would knit a little bit and split stitches and start with a few and get one of those wonderful big, wide, awful garter stitch things. And then I would put it down and be diverted by other things, and then she'd be knitting, and I'd say, oh, I want to knit again. So she'd cast on and get me started knitting again. And I don't remember how much I knit, but she let me just sort of do garter stitch things. And by the time I was about 8 or 9, she taught me to purl. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I was 10, I was working on my first sweater.
Wow.
So, and then I liked it, and I got it. And when I was 14, Aran sweaters were very big. And so I knit my first Aran sweater. And I loved the mathematics and the, you know, all the patterns and the repeats of them and the whole way it worked. But
okay. So
it was fascinating.
Given that you're into mathematics, I'm assuming there was something you did before you started writing knitting books.
I did.
Like a day job type thing. What did you do before?
I had several trips through the corporate world. Mm-hmm. I was a computer programmer for an insurance company, mm-hmm. and the first machine that I worked on was a 370-168, which only had, was quite remarkable at the time. It had 2 megs of memory, and it was water-cooled. But it had a big room dedicated to it with a raised floor and cables, and it just, it's remarkable. Because I remember early on when we were working, somebody said, oh, in 10 years, we're going to have computers that are going to be 12 inches by 12 inches by 12 inches. It'll be more powerful than what we've got in the data center. And I thought, never happen. Well, and yeah, wrong again. So I did that, and then I went to work for a mini computer manufacturer as a systems engineer, mm-hmm. and then I went into sales. And then I worked for AT&T, finally, selling voice and data systems on the American Express National Account team. Mm-hmm. And then my husband retired, and we bought the house in Florida, and we wanted to travel. And I said, this is great. Give up those pantyhose, and I will read trashy novels and eat bonbons. And then I got bored and said, no, I got to do a little something more here. Mm-hmm. And with traveling back and forth, and Florida is kind of remote, and I had a laptop at that point, and I got interested in knitting again, and I started looking at the books, and somehow one day I looked at a knitting book, and I said, I can do this. And so I started knitting and working on it, and I had a friend who had done a book, and I sort of didn't know what to do, and she just said, well, knit a few projects, write a really good cover letter, and then write a sample chapter and send it off. And so I sent to a couple of publishers, and somebody wrote back and said, yeah, this is really interesting, and away I went.
Amazing. And you're not limited to books as well, because you also did a compilation in a box that was very popular on our show.
Oh, yes, The Box of Socks, which is a beautiful format that my publisher, Martingale, mm-hmm. works with, and they have quite a few boxes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about it one day and suggested, well, you know, since I've done these sock, basically, it's a design-your-own sock book. I thought it would be interesting to have some sock patterns. And my publisher said, yes. And when I started working on it, it had been a long time and a lot of hard work to do all of both books. And I thought, where am I ever going to come up with the ideas for 20 socks? And my friend Beth did a lot of the knitting of samples for me for both books. And she's a brilliant knitter. And I thought, why doesn't she design a few of these? So... Mm-hmm. We split the design work for them. So half the designs in the box of socks are hers. And I'm quite pleased to say that most of the popular ones are the ones she did.
Do you have a preferred style of knitting socks? Are you a double point kind of gal? Or are you a too circular? Are you a magic looper?
I'm a double point person.
Okay.
But I learned to use them, and I like them. And then when two circulars came out, I thought, well, got to try that. And I did it for a while and liked it. And then the clanking of all the ends sort of bothered me. Mm-hmm. And then it was one too many times of picking up the wrong end and having the whole thing on one needle and then having to slip them all back. I said, no, this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And then I tried the magic loop. And
you just came back to...
Came back to double points.
Yeah. Well,
and then I recently did get a pair of the signature needles with the stiletto points. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem with a lot of needles is I really like the long, tapered, sharp points.
Yeah.
That it just makes it a lot easier if you're doing any pattern work or decreases that you need that...
That real
to
sharp
help you
point.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. We've heard good things about those. We have to get our hands on a set, too.
Oh,
review
yes.
a pair.
But yeah. Very dear, but very wonderful.
Well, we've also talked about, like, oh, what's the equipment you carry in your bag that you couldn't live without? Like, what should, you know?
Oh, in a little knitting pouch?
Yeah.
Well, I always carry some markers or some, like, crochet cotton so I can tie my own, a pair of scissors, my little gauge ruler.
Mm-hmm.
a ruler. An extra, several extra sets of double points. What else do I have in there?
Any scissors or snips, or are you a...
Oh, yeah, no, scissors. I have scissors. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful because I have scissors with one of those long beaded tassel-y things on it, so it makes it easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's about it. Somebody gave me one of those things with the little ends that you hold your double points all together with, but that's been lost somewhere along the line, so...
Do you have any favorite sock yarns that you're very fond of or that are like your kryptonite, you can't resist them?
I basically like very simple, solid, smooth, pedestrian yarns. So I'm a big fan. I really like the Frolic Swiss sock yarn.
Mm-hmm.
That was very nice. Some of the new ones are very similar to that, but they aren't twisted quite as tight, and I like a good twist to it. I very much like the whole style of yarns, like the Louette fingering weight, mm-hmm. and I guess Jitterbug, but there are a lot of people who are using that style of mm-hmm. yarn, and that's a very nice yarn. It tends to be a little bit heavier, and I like a finer gauge. I really like Anne from Schaefer,
mm-hmm.
but and because I do a lot of patterning in socks, I tend to like either solid or nearly solid.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people complained that I didn't do more and explain more about how to make hand-painted yarn work with socks, but I think that if you've got a high-contrast hand-painted yarn, the color change and all of that is so compelling that your eye only sees that, and you could do a really complicated, wonderful knitted pattern, and nobody would ever see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tend to use very simple yarns when I knit. Because I've done all this work, I want somebody to see it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any massive, awful, ghastly knitting disasters?
None that I'd like to share.
Oh.
Oh, I know this makes great fodder. No, I haven't. I tend to sort of pay attention when I knit, and I use, you know, a metal board and a ruler and try to keep track. I have a lot. I don't even count them, and every once in a while I go through things and find a huge number of unfinished projects, and I probably have $1,000 worth of needles sitting with unfinished projects. But... there are some number of projects that I have that would go into the category of, what was I thinking? I mean, you do it, and then later you say, what? What could this be? But one of them was a very complicated and beautiful Shetland shawl that I did in black.
Mm.
And it's a big square, and when you fold it over on itself, it looks like a rag. And
aww.
So whenever I teach a lace class, I bring it with me. And I'll say, you know, you think black lace is really wonderful and elegant, and I show them this rag, and then I hold it up and say, look at all that work. Nobody ever sees it. And so the choice is theirs, whether they want to follow in that in that vein. But I think it's not productive.
Now, do you have any useful tips or tricks for knitters that you were like, this is the one thing that turned my knitting around? This is the one thing that was like my moment?
One of the things that, as people look at my samples, both my mittens and my socks,
mm-hmm.
well, and my hats, if most people had the same yarn and the same needles and we just knit a little swatch,
mm-hmm.
my knitting would tend to be tighter than the average knitter. I then use smaller needles when I knit those because I believe those articles are meant for warmth and durability.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one tip that I would give is people will read the ball band or they'll look at the gauge in a pattern, and it may or may not be appropriate for what they're knitting. And I think that in most cases, for socks, mittens, hats, and those kinds of things, that knitting denser and knitting with smaller needles will give them a far more satisfying end product mm-hmm. than knitting loose. Yesterday in my durability class, a lot of people brought socks that had worn out. Well, some of them were just about as loose as cheesecloth.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they're going to wear out. But if you knit a denser, okay, it's more stitches, okay, it takes you a little bit more time, but it's a lot quicker to knit one really good pair of socks than two that are going to wear out.
How long does it take on average for a pair of your socks to wear out? I'm just curious.
I've never had a pair wear out.
Really?
And I guess the oldest pair of socks I have is probably from 1992 or 93.
Wow.
And I have some from the mid-90s. But I don't wear out shoes very well either. I mean, we all walk and wear out differently. Now, I've worn out some cotton socks. You know, I exercise and wear them, and some of those have worn out. Mm-hmm. But my wool socks, I don't have holes or have a problem with them. Thank goodness, because I don't want to have to know about doing the darning thing.
Do you want to talk about your upcoming books?
Yes. Well, one of them is Mostly Mittens again. Mm-hmm. And then the next book that's coming out will be in February. And that's a collection of socks that I'm editing with Beth Parrott. Mm-hmm. We have teamed up again. And it is a collection of sock patterns that have been in sock clubs. Not everybody knows about the internet or knows about sock clubs. And some of them are just fabulous. And some of them are from smaller sock clubs, so mm-hmm. It isn't necessarily that patterns everybody's seen. Mm-hmm. But it's been wonderful to see the design inspiration and the breadth and the difference in the kinds of yarn choices and pattern choices, and some of them are just amazingly beautiful.
Cool.
And the other thing, since I have a small foot, Beth has a large foot, and so size issues are important for us. Mm-hmm. So we've pushed in those patterns for the authors, the designers, to offer multiple sizes, and we discuss ways of sizing socks or looking at patterns to make them custom fit for you. Because if you're looking at a pattern, let's say you had a knit 2 purl 2 rib, and you just wanted it to be a little bit bigger. Well, if you did a knit 2 purl 3 rib, it would look just about the same. Mm-hmm. But because your eye doesn't pick up the purl ditch, you wouldn't know. So you could make it bigger that way by adding a few extra stitches in the purl. Well, there's that. Or if you have a large motif, you can add a couple of extra stitches on the side of it, which is easy. But just because a pattern is written one way, that's how it was used one time. You can edit it and make it work for you for another time.
Brilliant. I really like that because, like you, I have fairly slender ankles and average-sized feet, but it's not commercial socks, but the way patterns are written, they're generally just a little big, mm-hmm. So.
Well, it's either a smaller needle size, thinner yarn.
Yep. Or reworking a little bit of math.
Right. I'm really fascinated by German knitted lace. Mm-hmm. And in the early 80s, and I thought, yeah, I know how to knit, and I knit a bunch of sweaters, and that I knew what was going on. And so one year for Christmas, this friend of my mother's gave me a knitted doily. Mm-hmm. And I had never seen one before. And I looked at it, and I was amazed. And I thought, I just couldn't even imagine how you would knit it. And Annalise was a baby nurse. She was born in 1901 in Bavaria, came to the United States right after World War I. Times were hard in Germany. And she never married, but worked for a number of families, being the nanny and the baby nurse. Mm-hmm. And she had 15 of the original Christine Dutrau lace leaflets for doilies, basically. And she had macular degeneration, was in her 80s at the time, and was beginning to lose her sight, and was a very proper and wonderful lady. And so one afternoon I was visiting my mom, and she invited us over for tea. So we went, we had tea, and she pulled out the leaflets and the needles, and thank goodness that the patterns are basically charted. So she explained to me enough so that I could read the charts and taught me to read the charts and to knit doilies. And then when Lacisse reprinted the whole set, and I think there are over 90 of the patterns, mm-hmm. the pattern here for this shawl was in that collection, but you start on the outside and it's for a square doily. And I knit it, and I kept staring at it, and I said, well, square's nice, but it's not so handy. And I'm not a big fan of huge, big square shawls that you fold in half and wear as a triangle, because you've done twice the work, and many times folding it over on itself, you sort of lose the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. So I kept staring at this square, and then I charted it and played with it, and I figured out there was a way I could make it a rectangle. And so that's where this pattern came from, staring at this square and noodling around with the chart to make it work for longer. But it's all of those patterns are just wonderful and fascinating. And I keep thinking I'm going to, you know, do something with that, but other projects keep popping up.
You can find everything mentioned in this week's episode
on our show notes, which are located at knitmoregirlspodcast.com, and you can send any comments, questions, or feedback to me, Jasmine, J-A-S-M-I-N, at knitmoregirlspodcast.com.
Or me, Gigi, G-I-G-I, at knitmoregirlspodcast.com.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Everlaps as Knitmore Girls. And we have a great Ravelry group full of interesting people, and you should absolutely be a part of it.
This is Charlene,
Jasmine,
and Gigi
telling you to knit more.